98% pure potato.
98%
pure potato.
Hi, this is John Griffiths here with the next podcast on 98% pure potato. And this time I thought what I'd do is something which allows you to get a little bit of a picture behind the book, because the book is based on a little over 30 interviews with all sorts of people. And so I thought I'd just give you a little bit of background, because that's what there's never any time or space to put in the book itself. So that way you get to know a little bit more about the people that we spoke to, because ultimately the point of 98% Pure Potato is that it's a book which is based on the experiences of real people that worked as the first account planners. So I'm going to do this in the order in which I interviewed them. Tracy came in on some of the interviews, but not all of them. I was the one with the time to do it. So we'll start off with the first interview, which was with Paul Felwick, probably one of the most familiar planners in recent years, and who was head of planning at BNP for many years. And Paul was really useful because it was he who gave us the email addresses and the names for us to be able to contact an awful lot of the planners from the BNP side of things. The other thing I would say about the very long interview we had with him is that he talked a lot about the more recent work that he's been involved in, working inside organisations, and his idea that the role of planners is to improve the quality of the conversation. I found really inspiring, and I'm going to be using it working on the next book, which is Waggle Dances, but I'll come back to that maybe in subsequent podcasts. The second interview was out on Dartmoor. I broke away from holiday, where I was on holiday at the time, to go to a Dartmoor farm to track down David Cowan, where he lives. Interesting guy. I've already mentioned in the foreword about how the role he played in, I suppose, kickstarting the idea of the book when I met him at a marketing society do. The thing about David Cowan is he's very rigorous. He's very focused on getting things absolutely right, and talked about the importance of maths and precision. Very important figure, because he was at Pritchard Wood starting as a graduate trainee before he then moved to JWT and then was finally brought back into the fold by Stanley Pollitt back to BNP in its early days. So that's David Cowan. James Best was the third one, and he was a surprise. It's always interesting when you do these interviews and you find that the story isn't quite what the myths are painted. So David Cowan had given me to understand that the kind of people that were hired at BNP were very much physicists and mathematicians, and James Best was a historian. So that was interesting. It was also interesting because as we went through the interviews, more and more people told me how they felt that James Best was one of the smartest planners they'd ever worked alongside. And he was. I interviewed him at Adam and Eve. I remember Sarah Carter, I think it was, coming in with some of the proofs from a book they were working on about John Webster. And he still has an office there, but he was someone who worked right through his career at BNP. And then on to four. The first of the planners who had spent most, if not all, of their career at J. Walter Thompson, and this was Christine Gray. I knew about her already because I'd been interviewed by her many years ago as a youngster trying to get into J. Walter Thompson. And I put her on my website, Planning Above and Beyond, where I set up, because she was freelancing at the time. Christine Gray was very highly regarded. When other people talked about her, she was described as a terrier who always just went after the truth and got there. I was really pleased that she accepted to be interviewed as part of this project. On to number five, Jan Zajac. Jan, I think, wouldn't be offended if I described him as a bit of a renegade. There was a tension working on this project in, did you just talk to people who were regarded as somehow embodiments of the Burs Massimi Pollitt culture or JWT culture? And here was someone who had started at BNP, who'd gone to JWT, who'd worked at places like CDP as well. And when I first met him as a very, very junior, I was basically doing a placement at TBWA, and he was in the department there. So what I find really useful about Jan Zajac was the way in which he was able to look at each culture from the inside, but also the outside, and was often quite rude about the way in which that culture worked. And that I found really helpful to have a kind of renegade perspective. Jan is also a very fine painter, so you should look out for his stuff. If we ever manage to get an exhibition of his work together, that would be absolutely wonderful. Then on to John Modell. I had to drive down to Eastbourne to track down John Modell. I suppose the best way of describing him is as a creative mind who became a businessman, because he started his own agency and after that started a research agency and made himself quite prosperous, because the way you make money in advertising is by starting companies, not by working inside of them. So he did very well. The only planner, I think, who we interviewed, I think I mentioned, who'd got his own yacht and his own trout stream. So that was John Modell. And then from that interview with John Modell on the same day, I travelled back a few miles to interview Terry Prue from J. Walsh Thompson, who was, I'd known him a number of years and used him as a researcher when he was at Hudson Pier and Ideals. Terry Prue is one of the latest planners I interviewed at J. Walsh Thompson, and his real focus was on IP effectiveness and building cases for demonstrating the effectiveness of advertising. So it was great to interview someone I'd worked with on a number of occasions in this to talk about his experience of J. Walsh Thompson. And then on to Leslie Butterfield, who was the working at Interbrand when we interviewed him. Interesting interview because of the racket outside the windows, because the Interbrand offices are right on the Strand where the Olympic athletes at the time were just parading in the buses down there, and Lancaster bombers and Spitfires were flying overhead. So there's all of that. So I shut the door behind that and went to talk to Leslie. He was one of the younger first hires at Boaz Massimi Pollitt. And but what's interesting about him was that he was quite critical of a lot of the thinking, and he then moved on to join another startup, even smaller than BMP when he joined it, which was Abbott Mead and Vickers, rather a large agency now. So he basically took his learnings from what he thought was wrong with BMP planning and refined it at AMV for a number of years, and then he went and started his own agency, Butterfield Day, and therefore the interview focuses on what he learns, having left BMP, in terms of refining his understanding. And then from there, the ninth interview was with Peter Jones, one of the first planners ever, also at Pritchard Wood, and then going to Boaz Massimi Pollitt as one of the founders. Now, I let Peter Jones fly on this, because such an interesting character with a fascinating career, who seemed to have managed to have two careers at the same time, one in advertising all the way up to the global board of DDB in New York, but also with a love of horse racing and becoming a horse racing trainer and ultimately the chairman of the Tote. And so it was just great listening to his experience of how someone with those kind of planning questions moves up in the hierarchy, gets involved in flirtations and the acquisition of companies, and really interesting character. And he also was really helpful in putting me in touch with various people, including Chris Kaup, who I was going to interview, but Chris Kaup was very ill at that time with cancer, and we had a date in the diary to talk, which he had to cancel because of a chemo session, I think it was, and he died just a month after that. So great regrets that I never actually got to Chris. Then after that, David Baker, who was at J. Walsh Thompson. Really interesting character, because he was moved from planning into being an account handler, because he thought he could be more effective in resolving planning issues outside of planning, although he then came back in as a head of planning at J. Walsh Thompson, and he felt that JWT at the time was far too advertising-centric and was trying to move them towards integration. And he developed a whole integrated branding system, which in his judgment was not effective in the long run, which is something he very much regretted. But a really interesting character who'd inherited a way of thinking in terms of JWT planning, but had tried to advance it forward. Then after that, Roderick White. He's an interesting character because he was at J. Walsh Thompson when the planning department formed, but he stayed in the marketing department, so worked on a number of fairly key projects, which in effect were charged out to clients, one of them being making Mr. Kipling work as a business. But what was interesting, he became a planning director about 10 years later. I'd known Roderick for years. He'd used me on a project once. And also he became the editor of AdMap. So was a very knowledgeable observer of the advertising business and planning as it had developed. So a really interesting person to interview, and a classics nut as well. I think he was doing postgrad when we interviewed him. And then on to Ev Jenkins, who was cited many times by other JWT planners as being one of the greats, one of the great planners. And she really had made a reputation for herself working on things like the Oxo family, though she then subsequently went on to McCann Erickson and worked on the Gold Blend Couple campaign. But Ev Jenkins, a really interesting character, not least because of the way in which she had this way of taking people with her, which we've referred to in the book. Then on to Jack Crowley, who I think I would describe as a bit of a contrarian. He made an appointment for me to go and interview him at his home at 10:04, as I recall, on the basis that I would be more punctual than if he gave me a thing on the o'clock or away from it. He had been started at J. Wells Thompson as a creative before it was suggested by Jeremy Bullmore that he might do better in the planning department, so he'd moved across there. And he'd moved into research roles since, after leaving J. Wells Thompson. Really interesting character, and I was so excited to discover that he was the planner behind the inspired briefing on Kellogg's, where he had basically delivered to the creatives two cereal bowls, one with Kellogg's in it, which had an alarm clock, and another one with a pair of carpet slippers, which was a competitor, I think it might have been Weetabix, but a really creative individual. And then after that, there was an interview with Doug Richardson, really significant because he was the first planning head at J. Wells Thompson to succeed Stephen King. And he, after J. Wells Thompson, moved to the States, to Ogilvy & Mather, New York, to start planning there with rather mixed success. And in the interview, he tells that whole story. And we included that within the book. I think the other thing, which is something I'll always have a regret about, is that he then talked about his work with Tim Bell, in effect being a pioneer of PR planning. And I made a mental note to go back and interview Doug Richardson, because it seemed to me if I was going to do another book or something which was about the where planning had gone next, particularly in other communication disciplines, that Doug was quite key. But alas, Doug died a year later quite suddenly from a heart attack. So that interview will never be held. But it was a real honour to interview him. Then the next interview was with John Bruce, who had been at J. Wells Thompson joining the planning department at its very beginning. In fact, where John Bruce was significant was that John had not only been in the first meeting at which the name account planning was chosen, but also he had sent us a memo before the department opened with Stephen King's ideas about what this newfangled department account planning might be like. So that was really interesting to get that and to get the perspective from someone who'd been a planner quietly all the way through. And then there was a trip over to the West Country to interview John Siddall, who was another of these renegades who'd worked at a number of different places. Now, John Siddall now runs the Fine Cheese Company with his partner, Anne Marie. And I went to the Fine Cheese Company offices. They have a shop in Bath and one now in London in Knightsbridge, if you look it up on the internet. What was interesting about him was that he'd worked at JWT, CDP and BMP too, and he regarded the best planning experience he'd ever had as being at CDP, which really was the nudge to go and interview a number of planners at CDP to follow that line through. So he gave a really interesting interview. After working as a planner in these areas, he worked for many years as running his own research agency focusing on advertising research called Reflections. And then actually as part of the same day, I went down to visit Tony Stead, who was the person who had first given the name account planning. I first met Tony Stead when he was a planning head at JWT London, and he was a very forthright speaking and bluff Yorkshire character. I was really hoping that I could interview him, but Tony has Alzheimer's, so it simply wasn't appropriate to do so. So although I'd wanted to film and to audio record our conversation, it was very much a shadowy figure who kind of was coming out the cloud every few minutes and bringing a few fragmented memories of his time at JWT together. But one of those quotes I thought I could put into the book, and that's what the book closes with. I think I'll cut it off at this point and then do a subsequent podcast on the remaining interviews that we did.